You know, and I'm listening to Kiyosaki talk about developing multiple streams of passive income. And I'm listening to the Hamilton cast say, you know, to take my shot, to do not throw away your shot, right? I'm listening to that song called My Shot, right? And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my shot. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do real estate. I want to try to make this full time.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Matt Piccinni is focused on developing passive income streams for investors so they can choose how they want to spend their time. He's invested in over 8,000 apartments nationwide. He's a licensed real estate agent, a Fannie and Freddie Mac approved buyer, and has earned both the commercial real estate and real estate finance certificates from Boston University. Matt and his wife also have won two Tony Awards as co-producers of the Broadway shows Moulin Rouge and American Utopia. Matt, you've been everywhere, man. This is wild. I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks, Sam. I'm super excited to be here.
The pleasure is mine. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you very quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, I could tell you. It all started for me back in 2001. If you'll remember, the dot-com bubble had burst. Yep. I was working in digital marketing at the time. All of my clients were going out of business or not spending money on digital marketing projects. And my business was imploding. And right at that time, the landlord, the person for my primary residence, came up to me and said, I need you to move out. You got 90 days. So that was quite a rude awakening. So in 90 days, I managed to get a job because my business was not really viable at the moment. And I went in-house at Showtime, was a cable channel. They were a client of mine. And instead of renting, which I had been doing in New York, I actually compromised a little bit on the location, but was able to buy something. And 2 years later, sold that property and quadrupled my equity in the deal. And light bulb went off. Whoa, real estate, that's where I got to be. And that's what really started me on the path. I mean, there was a primary residence. That wasn't my first investment, but it got me on the path of, oh, okay, I need to explore this real estate investment thing because this is immensely powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's always the light bulb moment, or at least, you know, for a lot of people it is, when suddenly you're like, oh, wait, like you weren't looking for it, but it kind of hits you across the head and you go, okay, there's something here. I can keep working on this. You're up to 8,000 something units across the country. Tell us about that. I mean, how have you grown that side of your business?
Sure. Well, you know, for me, it went from that single family home to buying an investment property that became a rental. It was a vacation home. Mm. And then it went into single family and some fix and flips. And I was doing, you know, real estate as a hobby for about 10 years. But a little over 6 years ago, I really wanted to change this to full time, and I wanted to scale. The way that I found that would work best for me and what I wanted to do was through utilizing syndication, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about, but it's where a bunch of investors pool their resources together, capital, experiences, balance sheets, and can go after these otherwise unobtainable assets. And that's where I started getting involved in multifamily. You know, my portfolio of around 8,000, a little over 8,000 units that you mentioned, 2/3 of that are deals I'm a limited partner in. So I just invest passively in those deals. The other third, getting close to 2,400 units, are deals that I'm a general partner on. When I'm a general partner, I'm also the asset manager and very involved actively in the day-to-day operations of those properties.
Man, that's fantastic. How do you fit in producing or co-producing two Broadway shows right in the middle of a real estate career?
Well, let me go back for one quick second. I moved to New York City to pursue a career in theater. And for 5 years, I was a performer. And so I performed in shows all across the country. I was in 15 professional productions. Fast forward many, many years, I met my wife actually through an online dating website, not through theater, but it turns out she works in theater. That's her 9-to-5 job. And she works on the business end of theater, doing the production type work, not a performer. The two of us have been able to use our passion in theater and on the side, co-produce shows. We do that once in a while, not all the time, but we've invested in some shows that have lost money. We've also invested in Hamilton, which was a huge hit. And my wife and I co-produced Moulin Rouge and American Utopia. And I was very happy to say that we won two Tony Awards this past summer, which was awesome. Quite nice to get that sort of pat on the back an appreciation from the theater community that our shows are, I guess, ones that they thought had merit.
Man, that's awesome. I love it. I love it when someone isn't boxed in, right? Like there's a lot of times when there's like the, well, this is what I do. I'm an apartment syndicator and it's very rigid. But when there's that surprise of like, oh yeah, not only am I an apartment syndicator, but oh, by the way, I'm producing Broadway shows. Like that's fantastic. How do you tie the arts and your investments together?
Well, that's a really good question. I've never been asked that for a second. So I'm thinking on the fly here, Sam. For me, the theater has always been a passion of mine. And there's an interesting tie-in with the business that I do now. Going back to the story I told you about at the beginning where I had 90 days to get out, this was back in the right after the 90s. And I was very much a fan of the musical Rent. Mm. And Rent has a story. I actually had auditioned for it many times, got some callbacks, never was cast in the show though. But the story of Rent, there's a antagonist in the show. The bad guy is a guy named Benny. And Benny ends up marrying this rich woman and buying this building where his friends live and demanding that they pay him the back rent or get kicked out. He's going to, you know, bulldoze it and make condos. Evil guy, evil, evil guy. And back then is when I started thinking about it. And as I mentioned, this is when I actually bought my first apartment. And I talk about this in the book I wrote that just came out. But for me, it was a moment of, okay, do landlords have to be evil? Can landlords be a force of good? And so what I'm trying to do right now, sort of from that 90s idealism, from that Rent, that seed that was planted a long time ago, is can property ownership be a positive for communities? And so that's something that I work really hard on in my business and in my life, is making things a positive. And one of the ways that I can do that is by giving back to communities through either making apartments better or through charitable donations and work in that area. I've been very involved when I was living in Boston. We just moved back to New York City a few months ago, but in Boston, I was very involved in an organization called Caritas, which is working to end homelessness. And they provide housing, but not temporary housing, but permanent housing for homeless people, which is a fantastic organization. I'm looking for something in New York that does something similar. And also through the arts. I think the arts can be a form of social change, can bring light to certain subjects that maybe aren't being highlighted and can be a force of positive change in society. When you look at the shows that we've been involved in, you know, when you talk about a show like American Utopia, which is, you know, David Byrne, the lead singer from the Talking Heads, it's him on stage and talking about how he sees the world and talking about different ways to interact with one another and connect as humans, and also some injustices. He says he has a big thrust of the show at a certain point is talking about voting, and specifically voting in the midterm elections, because the midterm elections get overlooked a lot. And, you know, look, if you don't like what's going on in the country, or even if you do like what's going on in the country, you need to vote and make your voice be heard so that you have a say in that. And I think voting is super important. And so if I can be involved in art, which I love, that also has a social message behind it to one extent or another, then that's a win for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That is really, really cool. One of the other things that, you know, kind of came, you know, across to me was that you like to focus on revitalizing and elevating communities. What are some other ways that you really have put in kind of feet and hands to that idea?
Well, for us, you know, one of the questions that we look at when we look at one of the apartment communities that we're purchasing is, you know, what can we do to elevate this property? What can we do to make it better?
Right.
A lot of times we're purchasing properties that have been neglected. So, you know, first thing, low-hanging fruit is the deferred maintenance. We'll go ahead, we'll cure that. We'll look at things that we can do to make it environmentally friendly. Hmm. Making something environmentally friendly at a property, whether you're doing a water conservation program or energy or things of that nature, is it really helps three people, or it helps the tenants, because a lot of times the properties that we're purchasing are not all bills paid. The bills are paid by the tenants. So it lowers their utility costs, which they love. Number two, it's good for us. It lowers our utility costs for the common charges. And many times, depending on the loan that we're doing, we can get a loan. Fannie Mae has a green program, so we can get a reduction in our interest rate. And then thirdly, it's great for the environment. You know, the things that I'm doing that I talked about before, and even that, like I'm not It's not a charity. I'm not curing cancer. I'm not saving the entire planet, you know, one fell swoop or anything like that. But I think that if I can make the world just a little bit better than the way that I found it, for all of those people involved, everybody who touches a project, you know, the staff, we treat our staff really well. You know, even like during COVID, we did a lot of things that were really great to help the communities and help the staff. I feel like I can make a nice profit. I have great returns for my investors. They love it. And we're doing good. We're doing good in the world. And so it's got a nice feel good component to it as well.
That's fantastic. I love that. Talk to us about sometimes, you know, maybe a situation in which you found yourself either facing failure or significant hardship in business, either in the arts or in real estate investing or something else along your career. Tell us about a time when you faced something very challenging and then how did you overcome it?
Well, there was that opportunity back in 2001 when I got to figure out my entire life again. Another sort of challenging moment for me was when we moved from New York to Miami. So this is about 6.5 years ago. My wife got a call completely out of the blue for an amazing job opportunity, but it was in Miami, Florida.
Oh, wow.
And it was too good for us to pass up. So we moved down to Miami. And that was a challenge amongst all on its own. But once we got down there, I needed to figure out what I was going to do. I assumed I'm going to move to Miami and I'll probably be able to find some sort of job working in the digital marketing world, which I had done for a little over 18 years in New York and had been very successful getting recruited out of one company, pulled into another. I mean, I don't think I ever like looked for a job. It just kind of, there was a need in New York for that. And large, large projects. In Miami, I got down there, started talking to the different agencies down there. And there was like maybe 5 or 10 people in the agency. And I was used to managing teams of, you know, 50 to 100 people. So it was just on a very different scale. Wow. And the salaries weren't great. And at that time, I was listening to Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I was also listening to the Hamilton soundtrack, which had just come out. Or actually, I should say cast recording, not soundtrack. But so I was listening to those both at the same time, not simultaneously, but would bounce back and forth. And was in a position where it's like I was going out on these jobs, interviews. I didn't really like them. I wasn't even getting that many offers. When I got an offer, it was really not very much money. I'm in a completely new place. I didn't know what was going on. And quite honestly, I was burned out. I had done that agency life, which is long hours, sometimes all-nighters when we're pitching new business. And I was like, what am I doing? You know, and I'm listening to Kiyosaki talk about developing multiple streams of passive income. And I'm listening to the Hamilton cast saying, you know, to take my shot, to do not throw away your shot, right? I'm listening to that song called My Shot, right? And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my shot. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do real estate. I want to try to make this full time. And so I took what could have been seen as a dark moment where things kind of seemed lost and spoke with my wife about it. And I'll tell you, honestly, from a financial perspective, things were a little tight those first few years.
Right.
And luckily, we had some passive investments from the house. We had a townhouse that we had bought in Brooklyn. So we were renting that out. So we had some, that was cash flowing. We had some passive income coming from that. We had some passive income coming in from Hamilton. So we weren't destitute. I don't want to paint that picture, but it was tight. And it took several years to get the business going.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and good for you for having the fortitude to go, all right, this is not what I want to do again. You know, I think a lot of people get stuck in that, even though maybe it's not great, they just go ahead and take it because it's known. Right. And you said, hey, we're going to take maybe the path that maybe isn't so clearly well marked, but yet it sits right in your soul. So that's really cool. What were some challenges or maybe even some successes you had starting out in the multifamily space, especially maybe as it pertains to the capital raise side?
Oh, well, for me, I had some challenges getting into the multifamily space from a sponsorship perspective. I began investing. I wanted to sponsor a deal, but I began by investing as a limited partner. Mm. And I thought I would do the two sort of in a parallel. But what ended up happening was it took me 2 years to find my first deal to be a general partner on. Wow. So I had invested as a limited partner in 5 deals prior to that, which was great. I got a lot of experience sort of through osmosis of being an investor and things, but not the same sort of experience that you get from actually doing a deal hands-on. And it was challenging. I started off in a couple of markets before I found the market where I ended up finding a property. And I was looking in Ohio because that's where I had flipped some houses. And I was looking in Florida because I was living in Miami at the time. And that at that time, my wife got another call out of the blue. We moved to Boston. But I had been looking in Florida. I was living in South Florida. I grew up in Orlando. And my parents still lived there at the time. So I was searching, you know, Central Florida, Tampa, Daytona, Orlando, put in some offers, but just wasn't finding a deal. And then I ended up ultimately getting a deal in Kansas. I started looking in the Kansas City market, which raises some eyebrows. It's like, well, why did you pick Kansas City? But I had spent a summer there a long time ago and really enjoyed it. I had done a show back in my theater days. And I also had a very good friend who had recently moved there. So there was a little comfort level there just going, and at least I get to hang out with my old college roommate and his wife who went to college with us and their daughter, at least that first trip, and meet with brokers and property managers, and deals started looking like they would pencil out. Now, and truth be told, at this point, we're just about to sign a contract to sell the last property that we have in the last syndicated property that we have in Kansas City, because the prices have gone through the roof. I don't know why. I mean, it's a good market, but it's really gone berserk. And so our investors are really happy. And we've been exiting a lot of those deals over the past year, year and a half. But that was a challenge those first 2 years, trying to find the market that I liked and then make inroads with those brokers, the property managers. You have to develop those relationships so they feel comfortable knowing that you can close on a deal. The first deal I did was 132 units. It was almost $10 million. It was $9.9 million purchase price. So for a broker to feel comfortable that some guy that they don't know from out of town is coming in, says that he could buy this property, like, can he really come to the closing table?
Right.
Once I was able to do that and showed that I could perform in that market, then the doors started to open up. It wasn't like this big wide, you know, they didn't open wide. There wasn't a huge celebration, but then they started to crack open. And time after time of delivering on my promises, the doors opened a little wider each time.
Right. Man, Matt, this has been fun. Learned a ton from you today and love just hearing your story. You certainly have not disappointed me today in all the fun and amazing things you've done, especially just the ability to pivot. You know, I think that's a common, again, going back to this, the common question. People want to get started in real estate. They want to, you know, they want to scale. That's the name of this show, is how to scale. Like, they go, they're doing single family. Like, how do I crack that nut and go to the, you know, something a little bit bigger? What's that look like? And I think you've given some clues today on how to do that. So thanks for doing that. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this: what is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
My family.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that gives me the energy and the juice to keep going.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Love that. Question number two: if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would say it's all about relationships. And so in the way of looking at how to avoid it, make sure you're setting up relationships with people that share your same values, that you're aligned from a value perspective, and that you've done a little research and background checking on them. I haven't had any bad experiences, luckily, with my partners, but I do know people who have. So got to be careful.
Right. Absolutely. Love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Oh, I think getting involved in organizations that are doing positive work in a community is important, whether that's involvement in the arts or homelessness or food scarcity. I think that that's important, elevating the world, especially if it's a community in which you own investment and you invest in. If you can make that area better, it makes your property worth more. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Right. I love that. Matt, if listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you or even the book you have coming out, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, go to Piceny.com. It's Piceny.com. My book, Backstage Guide to Real Estate, is out on pre-order. If you order it before the release date of February 9th, 2022, it's on major, major, major discount. So get it if you can beforehand, but it's still reasonably priced after. I also have like a newsletter on there that sends out free tips and advice. And I've got a blog and videos and everything. So check out Piceny.com.
Matt, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.